views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. This is 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Peddlin' Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk. It's November 14th, 2022, to be rebroadcast on WHUS 91.7 FM and WHUS.org on November 16th, 2022. Welcome to Bicycle Talk with my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch. If you are watching on Facebook Live, please feel free to comment. I may be able to respond, and so may Fran. Yeah. Bicycle Talk is a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show and are listening on Facebook Live right here, you can comment right down here below, and we'll try to get back to you. Or you can send me an email if you're listening to this at bicycletalk, the numeral one, at gmail.com. I'm recording my shows on Monday now using Facebook Live and then playing them at our normal times on Wednesday at 11 a.m. at WHUS 91.7 FM. You can also listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on WHUS.org, iTunes, Spotify, or your favorite podcast outlet. Ron's Rant of the Week. People who don't volunteer and help for events that are cycling-oriented. Why am I here? I'll tell you why I'm here. It's time to volunteer for the 2022 National Cyclocross Championships. Any other local event, any at all that you are involved with, maybe it's a bike rodeo, maybe it's your bike club event, maybe it's just helping out with the, you know, the election. You know, but you should volunteer. It's a good thing. Get back to your society. It's a good thing. So anyway, I'm bringing this up because I'm not really big on people who don't help out. It's a rant. That's what it's all about. So I will tell you a little bit more about that when we move on to the positive side. Here we go. Always a shout out to Too Tall Billy Dujack and Laura Mullaly. Best wishes from Fran and I for speedy recoveries. Cross Nationals are coming to Hartford. That's a positive side. Yeah. If you were there last time in 2017, you know what excitement exists. It's a beautiful thing. So also on my Facebook Bicycle Talk page, you will see a link that will link you right over to the 2022 USA Cyclocross National Championship sign-up sheet. Yeah. Yeah, see, there's like a theme here. We got a little theme. All volunteers. Now, here's the best part about this. So the last time you volunteered for something, what'd you get? A thank you, a pat on the back, maybe a couple of bucks. You never know. People might help out in some way or another. Here's the great deal for helping sign up at Nationals. All volunteers will receive a wristband, which gives you access to the event from December 6th through the 11th. I posted this last week, I think right after I did my show. I think I posted this up on the Facebook page. Within less than 10 minutes, Dave Rustico, our local national champion, was signed up and ready to go with a big thank you. So this is a good thing. This is a really good thing. So we've got, and it's kind of cool because I was reading a little piece that he had written recently, maybe within the last day or so, and he talked about having to travel all the way out to, I believe it was in Chicago last year, maybe outside of Chicago, to go to Nationals and, you know, pack in the car up and go through all that. Now it's only 18 miles from his house. It's a beautiful thing, isn't it? Anyway, shout out to Dave. Hope to see you there. And actually, I think we are working together on one of the days that we signed up on. I signed up for three different days. And I think I got a big shout out here to John Hankins because I saw him on the list also. So pretty cool. Find yourself a day that works for you. There's a whole bunch of different jobs you can do if you don't want to be outside and exposed in the weather because you don't know what it's going to be like in December. There's also volunteer signups for packet pickup and for registration, all sorts of things. So if you're looking to help out with this year's Nationals and also get a free pass to watching the Nationals, it's a great deal. You should do this. It's a very cool thing. Okay. Bringing me on to, let's see what I got here. The Mechanical Minute and Cycling Tips. So I had this question posed to me this morning in the weekly morning, Monday morning spin class. And one of the folks who takes my class, she said, "So how do I store my bike for the winter?" That's a great question. It's a great question. So I said I would cover it on the show today because there are people that, believe it or not, give up their bikes for the winter.
But what if it's a nice day and you want to go ride your bike? You don't store it for the winter. You keep it out because in case you want to go for a ride.
Do you hear this? Yeah. It's all true. No, you're right. You're absolutely right. That can happen. It could be a beautiful day. So when I store my bikes, I store them in the garage and I can pull them off the hooks whenever I want. I use a storage hook is what I use. It's a threaded hook that we just drill I drill like a little quarter inch hole or so, or 3/16 hole, and then I screw the hook into the rafters in the garage, and then I hang them, and you can hang them by the front wheel, the rear wheel, or both wheels if you want to. So, but what we're going to do here is, let's see, here we go. I found this great little piece, and this was published a while ago, and it was on Georgiana Terry's site, how to store your bicycle for winter. So here's some tips on how to store your bike for winter before you put it away. First of all, clean and wax your frame. Sure, start out with a nice clean bike next year. Beautiful when the weather gets nice. Clean the wheels, rims, and spokes. So this is going to require sitting down with some soapy water and a rag and just going over the whole bike and cleaning it up real nice. And replace the handlebar tape. It's probably getting pretty tired after a season of riding anyway. I like to start my season fresh with a brand new roll of handlebar tape on my road bike. And if you're an upright bar person, then maybe you want to put a new set of grips on there too. Kim DeBoard says, solution, don't out your bike. Don't put your bike away for the winter. That's very nice.
Right,
yeah.
That's what I said.
Yeah, that's another one. That is another solution, Kim, for those of you who are hardy enough to deal with the cold weather and handle all that. By the way, you can deal with some pretty cold weather if you are dressed properly and have the proper equipment to do it. So that's really cool. So anyway, clean and treat the saddle surface. This is a note to all of you Brooks saddle users. You know, you people that ride on dead cows?
Yes.
Those really thick.
My friend Dave rides on
one. Oh, I know Dave rides on one. Dave has, I tried the Brooks saddle thing once.
Yeah.
And I'm not of the right.
It's not for everybody.
Stature. I don't know what you want to call it. To be able to break one of those things in. I just don't have enough body mass to like really do what needs to be done to make that saddle work for me. I found it to be the most uncomfortable thing I've ever ridden on in my life. And I used Neat's foot oil, and I used Proof Hide, and I used a baseball bat, and all the things you're supposed to do to break in that beautiful leather saddle. And I hear they're wonderful once you get them there, but
what's a Neat?
Never ever got it there. Never.
What's a Neat and what are its feet like?
Oh, yeah, Neat's feet. Yeah, right. Yeah. You know, you extract the oil from the Neat, from the creature, the Neat, right?
My dad used to talk about Neat's foot. That's one of those funny things that he used to say.
It's a leather dressing. It's an oil. It's a leather dressing.
What is it?
I don't know. You'll have to look that up and get back to us on that one. Anyway, also apply oil at all the pivot points on the derailleurs. Simple. This is all pretty simple, basic maintenance stuff. Loosen the seat post binder bolt, remove the seat post, lube it, and reinstall it. That's a biggie, okay? A lot of people never even think about it. Once they set their seat height, they just leave it there and they never, ever touch it. Well, let me tell you what's going on inside there. There is a problem if you are using an aluminum post and you are using either an aluminum or a steel frame. Those metals will start having fun with one another and they will eventually become one. And then you have a very, very stuck seat post. Not good. Not good at all. I also, I've got carbon fiber posts, and I don't think you have as much problem with carbon fiber posts, but there is there are slippage issues with carbon fiber posts. So what I like to do is Finish Line Products makes a really nice carbon prep. It's kind of like a grease, but it's also got some grit in it, and it really holds things in place really nicely, keeps your posts from slipping. And also, you know, I like to refresh it in the wintertime when I'm going over the bike for the winter and getting it ready for spring. I like to, you know, just clean that seat post out really, really good, and then refresh it with some fresh grease. So always good to do that. And then fix anything that needs to be fixed so you don't have to worry about it in the spring. Or here's a big shout out. You could bring it to your local bike shop and say, hey, I need to store my bike for the wintertime. Could you like just prep it up so I can hang it and know that when I go to put some air on the tires in the spring that, you know, I can just hop on my bike and go? Local bike shops are less busy now than they are in the summertime. So this is a great time to go visit your local bike shop and have a little chat with them. Have them check the bike over. You may find something like a cable that might be possibly breaking. I just fixed a broken STI cable last week for someone. And I got a haircut out of it. It was kind of nice. It's still there. I still got the hair. But anyway, I got a haircut out of it. So thanks, Cindy. Anyway, you want to just make sure that the bike is ready to go. Now, it was suggested that you might want to take the air out of the tires. I don't really bother. My bike's hanging from a hook. Usually over the wintertime, the air kind of slowly seeps out anyway, and they're pretty soft. What you don't want to do, definitely don't want to do, is you don't want to leave the bike sitting on its wheels all winter, especially if it's on a concrete floor. You don't want to do that. So if it's in a garage or someplace like that, I'm not a big fan of letting the bike sit on its wheels. I like to hang the bike up. You can hang the bike upside down. You can hang it by the front wheel. You can hang it by the rear wheel. Most of my bicycles, including the tandem in the garage, they're all hanging by both wheels in the wintertime. That gets them a little bit higher up off the ground and allows me to drive my car in and not hit the bike because it's over my head. So that's kind of nice. So that's what I would recommend as far as storing your bikes go. Clean it up, make it pretty, and get it ready to ride the next time it gets nice out. And of course, if you're in the situation like Fran just said here, and what if it's nice out and I want to go for a ride? You can just take it off the hook and go off for a ride. Put some air on the tires, go for a ride.
That's if you have long arms.
But I will mention this to you, and this is important. If it's nice out in the fact that it finally went up to 50 degrees, I'll call it, because that's kind of like in the spring, that would be a thing. And it's really nice out, but the roads are sopping wet. Yeah, all that work you just did, not so good. My recommendation, very strong recommendation, is have another bike. Have a second bike, one that you use as your winter bike or your muck bike or whatever you want to call it.
Beater bike,
you can do that. I've got a few of them. I've got my cyclocross bike, and I've got my single speed bike, and which is also a cyclocross bike, and I do have a mountain bike down there, but I hardly ever use it. And then I also have an old e-bike with fenders on it. So I could use almost anything to get myself back out there again if I wanted. Winter is why you have a beater bike. That's what Billy says. Hey, Billy, how you doing? So I agree. Everybody should have a beater bike. And what is a beater bike? A beater bike is that bike that you rode diligently for so many years, and you got all sorts of great service out of it, and then somehow something flashed in front of your eyes. You saw some eye candy and you went, I gotta have a new bike. And you went out and bought a new bike, but you still have the old bike. Or hopefully you still have the old bike. Maybe you traded it in. Maybe you sold it. Maybe you gave it to a friend. Who knows what you did with it. But if you kept it, it becomes the beater bike. And that's when you can use that. You can use that on those occasions that you don't really want to mess up your brand new perfect pretty bike.
Also on Zwift.
And it's a good thing. Formula for number of bikes. N plus one. We know that. Yes, absolutely. So anyway, you want to, if you're going to store the bike, I mean, if you're in a situation where you really, really aren't planning on riding the bike at all, and you might be able to put it into a storage area or into a even like one of those, you know, commercial storage places where people put boxes and furniture and things like that, then just make sure that it's not sitting on the wheels. That's the key. You want to hang it up if you can. Hang it up, flip it over upside down, whatever it is. So there is a problem possibly with condensation if you're storing your bike in a really cold location. Even if a moist, warm front blows in and raises the temperatures, condensation will occur on the outside of the frame, but not on the inside. Consider this comment by an engineer, an engineer's engineer. Those of you who have been in the bicycle industry as long as I have know this name, Jobst Brandt. And what Jobst Brandt says on condensation, before moist, warm air can effectively diffuse through the tiny openings into an unpainted tube interior, the frame will have warmed up to ambient. Condensation on the exterior finish is certainly less damaging than one ride in the rain, but then fearmongers abound on the net. So anyway, if you do store your bike inside, just make sure it's in a place where no one's going to run into it, like maybe with a motorized vehicle or maybe even with their head or whatever. You want to make sure it's up high enough so they don't bonk everybody in the head. And if you have electronic goodies on the bike and they use rechargeable batteries, check the manufacturer's instruction for the best way to store them over a long time. Should the batteries be fully charged prior to storage, partially charged, or something else? Hard to say. You need to find out from your manufacturer as far as that goes. I would take the electronic items off of the bike and I would keep them in a different place. I would probably keep them in a warmer place is what I would do. But that's just me. So there you go. That's it. That's what we got. That's our big tip for how to store your bicycle for the winter. Very, very good stuff. And then I got this little snippet from Shimano because, you know, Shimano's got to put their 2 cents in here. So what if I have disc brakes and I hang my bike upside down? Well, there's a couple of schools of thought out here and I've heard it from both directions, but Shimano, the almighty Shimano, you know Shimano, they're kind of well known in the industry. They say the disc brake is not designed to work when the bicycle is upside down. If the bicycle is turned upside down or on its side, the brake may not work correctly and a serious accident could occur. Before riding the bicycle, be sure to operate the brake lever a few times to check and see if the brakes operate normally. If the brakes do not operate normally, stop using the brakes and consult a dealer or an agency. That's what Shimano says. So Shimano seems to feel that if you flip the bike upside down for an extended period of time, you're kind of going to mess up the disc brakes. Comments, please. Comments. I'd love to hear that. These are fluid brakes. These are not the ones you have mechanical brakes, friend.
So Don wants to know, what about turning your bike upside down and store it resting on its seat?
Yeah, you can do that, but put something underneath the seat so you don't scuff the seat. And also, if you're putting it on its seat, great question, Don. If you're putting it on its seat and you're putting it on an area that may have some moisture, like a concrete floor, garage floor, basement floor, something like that, you could probably pull some moisture up there and you could end up with mold on your seat. So I would either put the seat in plastic bag, take a plastic bag, put it over the top, and just, you know, protect it that way, or, you know, put it on like a soft surface of some sort. Just put a piece of wood underneath where the seat is. You could do that. Once again, when you flip the bike upside down like that, it is a little bit more prone to be tipped over, knocked over if someone bumps into it. So just be real careful and cautious as to where you put it. But yeah, definitely put something over the seat, please, because the seat will inevitably have a it may have a vinyl cover on it. It might have a leather cover on it, or it might be a leather seat. So you definitely want to protect that. And once again, if it is a full leather saddle, you want to put some sort of a leather dressing on. If it is just even a cover, I would probably dress the saddle with some sort of leather dressing before even putting a cover over it, if I'm going to flip it upside down and put it on the seat. So that would be, those are my suggestions. That's it. That's it for my mechanical minute, which is always more than a minute, and cycling tips. content. So last week, I talked about changing the gearing over on my bicycles to give me a lower gear to utilize higher cadence. So what did I discover? I discovered that I could spin better going up the hills. Yay! Good idea. Jeez, that was quite a revelation to figure that one out. This is something I've known for years. It's something that when I got into cycling, really into cycling, I'll say, back in the, back in the 70s, and I was hanging out with a bunch of other bike geeks. They, my roommate at the time, took a look at me riding on my bike, and he said, "God, you have a great spin. We're going to work on that. We're going to work on your cadence." And I said, "But why, if I've already got it?" He said, "Because this will save you someday. This is a good thing." He wasn't wrong. If you're one of those people that can turn the legs over fast, great. It's a great thing because you're still efficient doing it, then it's a wonderful thing. There is a crossing point there where, okay, I'm spinning so fast that I'm not putting any power out and therefore I'm falling back because of it, or I'm not spinning fast enough and therefore I'm slugging on the bike and now my legs are cramping up because I'm working too hard. So there is a point there. So the general, and I say very, very general idea here, is between 80 and 100 RPMs. Some of us who spin a little bit faster may find that between 90 and 110 RPMs works better for us. Some of us who spin a little bit slower may find 80 to be our max out, and boy, that's really hard to hold that. But you want to at least hold 80, 80 or 90 RPMs. All the studies show that this is the thing to do. I've got a piece here from Pez Cycling News, and in the article it talks about cycling cadence and discusses the wide range of cadence drills you might want to consider and adding to your own training. So there you go. There's cadence drills there. I have another piece here, and we'll talk a little bit more about this, from Kreitler Rollers. And Kreitler Rollers are all about the cadence. They're all about the spin. It's something that you can do in the wintertime to help increase your cadence, get more comfortable with spinning at higher RPMs. Definitely something that also builds your skills. I'm kind of a fan of the rollers. I like the rollers a lot. If I'm bringing somebody new into cycling, especially if I have been riding with them, and let's say they're riding with me on my group rides, and they're a lot wiggly going down the road. Not a little wiggly. I mean, a lot wiggly, like inconsistent, can't hold a straight line, just a little frightening to ride with. I really, really try to point them over to rollers. And if anyone locally is listening to this and is interested, I have an old pair of, they're nothing fancy rollers, but they're available if anybody wants them. But anyway, I'll probably put it out on the Facebook page here in the next few days and see if I get any bites on it. Free for the asking. So my Kreitler rollers, I'm keeping those. I like those. Those are nice. So anyway, let's go back to this guy right here and see if I can pull this up, because I think I did not earlier. And we will go to here. Cadence training from Pez Cycling News. So should you do this? Should you take it for a spin? Okay. Some of us consider ourselves as spinners, generally prefer a higher cadence. Others consider themselves as grinders, who generally prefer a slower cadence. Here's a closer look at how cycling cadence affects your speed and power on the bike. All right. So this is why we're exploring this. What is cadence? If you're listening to this show and you're a bicycle person, you kind of know what cadence is. It's RPMs, it's revolutions per minute, and that's your turnover on your legs is what it is. And your cadence influences how much power you produce while cycling, along with how hard you are physically pushing on the pedals, which is torque. For a fixed amount of power, a lower cadence requires a higher torque. This involves more involvement from the muscular system. On the other hand, a higher cadence shifts some of that load from the muscular to the cardiovascular system. So we go back there. Let's just back up a second. So if you're like the brute type that can go out and ride your bike for an hour and you just like to push hard on those pedals and go fast, good for you. But if you're going out and you're riding for 2 or 3 hours at a time, maybe a little more, you want to work on your cadence. You want to work on that cardiovascular system because it really makes it a lot easier when you get to, let's say you get to a short punchy climb and you need to get over that climb and you've been spinning, then you're going to be able to have some power left to do that because you haven't wasted it somewhere else, like on a flat section of road pushing a really big gear. So novice cyclists tend to have a lower cadence, usually below 60 RPMs, while well-trained cyclists often have a higher cadence, somewhere between 80 and 90 RPMs. This brings us to the question, what's a good cadence? There's no real clear answer. A good cadence is the cadence that works for you. That's a really good explanation of this. For me, it's high. It's really high. I do much, much better when I use high cadence. And if you have the ability to train with a wattage meter of some sort, whether it be on an indoor cycle or whether it be on your actual outdoor bicycle, wattage meter is a key piece of information that you can get, good information source, because you can see actually how many more watts you're putting out by adjusting RPM or how few watts you're putting out by adjusting RPM. So you can kind of find your sweet spot there and see exactly what works. But your muscles aren't able to effectively generate large amounts of power at such low cadences. So anything below 60 RPM, and you're just not going to be in good shape with it. Take a look at these bicycle racers, professional bicycle racers, and you see them winding it up, quote unquote, for a sprint. All right. They are winding up a very, very big and, in my world, undesirable gear. It's just gonna hurt. It's just gonna hurt. But when they wind out at the finish line, if they're both in the same gear, if they're side by side with one another, the man who spins the fastest is the fastest. Don't forget that, because you're turning your legs over a little bit faster using the same gear. You are obviously going to go, you're going to be able to travel more road. You're going to be able to move your inches down the road
Joe
a little
Saling
bit quicker.
Said that.
I believe Joe Saling did say that. Shout out to Joe, New Jersey Joe, great, great old friend and many time national road champion. So, yeah, yay Joe. Yay Joe. He's the guy with the yellow paper too. So, the case for training cadence, okay, so it says here, if you look around, you will often see cadence workouts posted on various training sites. Are those workouts clickbait or is there some benefit to training your cadence? And if you did want to add some cadence drills to your training, how would you go about it? There are a few different types of cadence drills that you might consider. These usually include drills for muscular endurance, endurance spinning, and single leg drills. But we'll look at some of the detailed drills from a research literature below. All right, so at the moment, it seems that the science is rather confused and far settled. A 2016 meta-analysis, which combines the results of several research studies into one statistical analysis on training at low cadences, shows mixed results at best. Some studies show increases in athlete ramp test power, while others show that the training at an athlete's self-selected cadence led to greater fitness improvements. We'll take a closer look. So it really comes down to, here's the study. So the outcome, low cadence group showed greater improvements in ramp test power. Okay. So at power at four, I don't know what that is. Loosely their FTP and VO2 max. Okay. So they perform sets of 12 maximum crank revolutions at relatively low cadence, 80 RPMs, and high power output, 700 watts. Ouch, who does that? Not me. A control group did endurance cycling and strength training, squats and leg presses. Outcome, no difference observed between the low cadence group and the group that performed strength training. And then he had cyclists perform 12 weeks of twice-weekly training, 5 by 6 minute intervals at a moderate intensity at either low cadence for 40 RPMs or self-selected cadence. Outcome, low cadence group observed better improvements in uphill and flat time trial. So there is an argument for low cadence and high resistance if you're looking to build strength. You got to be a little careful with this, because at the same time as you're doing this, you're putting a lot of lateral pressure on your knees and joints, and that could end up causing you some knee pain. If it in any way you do a drill like that and it causes knee pain, stop doing it. That's all. Just stop. It's obviously not your way of training. It's not going to work for you. So they also had cyclists perform 12 weeks of twice weekly training, 5 by 6 minute intervals at moderate intensity at either low cadence or self-selected. Low cadence group, not see improvements. I think we did that. So anyway, here's another one. Had cyclists 2 weeks of 5 60-minute training sessions below their FTP, their fitness threshold, at either low cadence, 35 RPMs, or high cadence, 75 RPMs. The low cadence group saw improvements during low cadence efforts. Where's my outcome? The low and high cadence groups saw similar improvements in VO2 max and FTP. So both groups saw similar improvements, but the low cadence group did see greater improvement with their 15-minute time trial power. So that's kind of interesting. You get a little bit more out of it because of that. I got some more stuff I'm going to pull up here. It comes from Kreitler, and I think it will help us maybe take a look at this a little bit more. But let's look at this. High power, low cadence sprints. Let's say 5 30-second sprints at 500 watts with a low cadence. You might try doing that outside by staying seated, using a large gear, and give yourself an easy 2 minute recovery between efforts. Remember that? 2 minute recovery between efforts. Moderate intensity, low cadence drills, 4 6 by 5 minute intervals at moderate intensity. That's just under 105% FTP. The intervals should be completed at a low cadence, 60 RPMs. 5 minute easy recoveries around 100 watts between each set. So really long recoveries. That's some interesting things here. Sub FTP low cadence drills. When you're riding at zone 2, consider adding some intervals at low cadence. Note that these sorts of drills tend to be least effective of the low cadence training regimes. Conclusion, if you want to build power, you go for the low cadence. If you're looking to build endurance, we're going to go the other way here. And let me see if I can find this right here. Here we are. This is from Kreitler Rollers, just so we get a little bit of idea. Now, obviously, Kreitler Rollers is going to push cadence, because cadence is something that you have to develop while you're riding on the rollers. And also, as you develop your cadence better on the rollers, you become more balanced on the rollers. You also become a much better rider. You become a much straighter going down the road type of rider. So they recommend that you get a power meter of some sort if you can, because once again, you can use the power to judge as far as where you're at with what is this cadence doing for me. If I can hold a certain wattage of power and hold it at a higher, I find it's easier for me to hold it seated at a higher cadence than it is for me to push it at a lower cadence and pushing really hard on the pedals. If I push really hard on the pedals, try to maintain the same wattage, I find my legs get really tired really fast. So I'm better off using a high cadence when I'm doing my intervals. My intervals have greatly improved over the last year due to rebuild right here in the center section. So I definitely am getting a bigger bonus as far as my cardiovascular system goes, which is really cool. And Billy says power meters are the only true measure of calories burned as well. Yeah, that's a good point. Very good point. So I have found that I am, by the time I go through an interval session, if I'm doing an HIIT session, I find that I will also be able to complete, if I'm going to do a set of six or a set of eight, I find that I'm able to complete them better at the same power output than I would if I was pushing on a big gear. So I will also tell you that my cardiovascular system is just climbing and climbing and climbing. My heart rate's going way up. I'm definitely getting myself pushing the limits, coming out of zone three, going deep into zone four, maybe even tapping into zone five, depending on the workout. All the workouts are different, but it all comes down to you wanna just do what you can do. So anyway, here's a session for you. This is on rollers from Kreitler. So warm up for 10 minutes at a comfortable cadence, usually between 85 and 95 RPMs. Include three max cadence rev outs. Ooh, those are fun. I call those spin ups. And I often teach those when I'm teaching my my extreme spin class in the wintertime. And we do spin ups. We do one legged drills. We do a few different things, which kind of teach my students of the benefits of understanding what it is your body is actually doing while it's on the bike. And so I find they work real well. So this is the following 3 6-minute intervals with 5 minutes steady riding in between. 1 minute at 100 RPMs, 1 minute at 110 RPMs, or around it, but just or just above it. So that's interesting. So you go for a minute at 100 RPMs, and then you increase one more minute for 110 RPMs. So you're really cranking out the RPMs. Obviously, this is one other thing you might need. You might need a cadence meter on your bike to be able to read this out, if that's at all possible. And then 1 minute, 100 RPMs, 1 minute at 115 RPMs. And then the third set, 1 minute at 100 RPMs, 1 minute at 120 RPMs. Puff, puff. And then 5 minutes of recovery at around 90 RPMs. 5 minutes of recovery. And then you hop into your next set and you go 1 minute at 100 RPMs, 1 minute at 115, 1 minute at 100 RPMs, 1 minute at 120, 1 minute at 100 RPMs, 1 minute at 125, with 5 minutes recovery at around 90 RPMs. So these are not easy, because then it gets really intense. And this is where you get into the sprinter mode here. Like I said, you know those guys and girls you see sprinting for the finish line, and they're just winding it out and their legs are flying around real fast. This is for you. 1 minute at 100 RPMs, followed by 1 minute at 120 RPMs. 1 minute at 100 RPMs, followed by 1 minute at 125. 1 minute at 100, followed by 1 minute at 130. Then you do a 10-minute cool down, and your workout is done. So what is this doing to me? What exactly is going on? It's training your body to be able to handle the higher cadence. And as you get, and in the wintertime, what I like to do, and I like to talk to people about this when they're saying, well, I just don't like riding my bike inside because it really stinks and it's really terrible. And, you know, I would rather go out and freeze my butt off and or whatever. Or I'd rather sit down with the couch, the clicker, and a big fat pizza. And we know the results of that. That doesn't work. Anyway, it's meant to develop your cadence. When you get back on your bike in the spring and you get back outside, you're going to find that you may have trained, may have, I'm not going to say you did, but you may have trained your body to accept a comfort level of higher cadence, which is really what you're looking for, because it's more efficient. And that's really what it comes down to. So people that look at me and say, I can't spin that fast. I just can't. Have you ever trained to try to spin that fast? Have you ever worked on that to see? And I look at these folks that are marathon runners and, you know, just high level cardiovascular athletes, and they're out there just beating themselves on their bikes. And it's like, you do realize you have this machine within your body that can process the amount of work you're doing at a much more efficient level if you just increase your cadence. It does make a difference. Hard to convince some people, but it's what it is. So I really like to, you know, there'll be more of these lessons on here. I'm going to keep this page up and bookmarked so that I can basically refer to this again in future episodes, because I think there's some really, really good information here, which is kind of nice. So let's just pop that in there, and then we're saved. Because there's other sessions you can do for other types of workouts as far as that goes. But the key here is, if you're planning on using that incredibly well-developed cardiovascular system that you've been working on for your entire life and you want to use it to your advantage, cadence is the answer. It's all about the cadence. So we'll talk more about that on another episode of Bicycle Talk. But I did want to bring that up because that's kind of the direction I'm looking at right now for winter, this winter. Now that I've started to understand that I have a much improved cardiovascular system and that I am actually finding myself putting out more watts at a lower heart rate, or it's not a low heart rate, it's a lower heart rate than I used to be able to put out that a similar type of wattage, actually a much lesser wattage. I'm going to try to figure this all out, and I'm going to learn from it, and I'll pass this information on to you in future episodes as I develop myself and learn more about coaching myself and seeing if it does anything for me. And, you know, if I end up going slower, then we're just going to chalk it up to old age, because I am an old fart. So anyway,
ew.
That's what it is. Ew, you don't like that, huh? So anyway, let's see. What else do we have here on the list of lovely things to do? So here's a fun one. I was poking around and, you know, I was talking to somebody about bike lanes, and we're talking about painted lanes on the road. And then I heard about this woman, and let's see here. Where is it? Make sure I find the right one here. It might be this right here. There was a woman who had spent a bunch of time with her husband, I believe, over in, her name was Sarah Langenkamp, and she died on August 25th. She was riding her bicycle home from an event that her two little kids were in at school, returning from a meeting at her child's school, and a Volvo flatbed truck turned right from the road into a parking lot and hit her. You know the old right-hand turn in front of you when you, yes, well, she got cleaned off, and the rest is history, and now her husband is doing everything he can to try to figure out how to bring this to light. So Langenkamp, who had recently returned from serving in the Ukraine, was biking during daylight in a bike lane on River Road in Bethesda, Maryland, returning from a meeting at her child's school when this happened. Her injuries were fatal. So she's in a bike lane. Why was she hit in a bike lane? Okay, paint's on the road, sharrows are up. It's toilet paper, folks. That's really what I'm finding out. The more I researched into this, the more I looked at it, the more I realized that bike lanes, as significant as they may be, they are not safer than riding your bike in a protected lane, if you can find a protected lane, or just getting your butt out in the road and making sure that the cars see you from behind and have to slow down enough to get around you. So anyway, the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration estimated that 938 cyclists were killed on the roads in 2020, the latest available data. That's up 9% from 2019 and the highest number since 1987. Injuries were estimated at 10,171, down 21% from the previous year. So we need to rethink this. This is a Forbes article, by the way. And it says here, we need to rethink the concept of bike lanes as a safe space for cyclists. Why? Because it's impossible to structure bike lanes without vehicles turning into these lanes to get to underground garages, above ground parking lots, and make right or left turns at intersections. In the case of Langenkamp, the truck driver was turning to go into a commercial strip area. He did not see her. How many times have I heard that? I never saw you. The bike lane at that location where this person had ridden many times is narrow without protection from car lanes. However, even when bike lanes are protected from car lanes with a line of parked cars or a physical barrier, it's still necessary to have entranceways so that cars can get into businesses and make turns. The problem is that if you don't make this visible, or if we don't educate drivers of motorized vehicles, this is not going to go anywhere. We're just going to be, you know, banging on the drum and getting nothing, no one to hear it. So the other part of this equation, very, very strong part of this equation, is that if you're riding on the bicycle, obey the laws. Don't do anything foolish or stupid, because you're going to lose this battle. If you have to go up in front of a loaded gun, the bullet's in the chamber, you're in trouble. It's going to happen. So don't play around with traffic. Okay? You can play in traffic. You can't play around in traffic. So don't do that. So separate bike lanes are definitely the ways to go. So as I looked into this a little bit more, and I've got more information here, which I thought was really interesting. Let's see if I can find the one I'm looking for. This is right here. So this one says there was an interesting study. I got to try to find the study here. I thought it was really intriguing that what would happen. So here's study finds that painted bike lanes aren't helpful. This comes from our friends out in Portland. Drivers left an average of 5.5 feet between vehicles and bicycles when passing. Okay. Drivers left 3.25 feet between vehicles and bicycles when using roads that had painted bike lanes. Hear that? 5.5 feet when the roads aren't marked, 3.25 feet when the roads are marked. SUVs and buses were less likely to leave a safe cushion between themselves and bicycles while passing. I can attribute to that. I had a foot and a half Datco bus come that close to me this last summer. Drivers left less space traveling on roads with narrow lanes or speed limits at or above 35 miles per hour. Very, very interesting. So the important takeaway is drivers leave less space between themselves and bicycles on roads with painted bike lanes. In fact, drivers in the study drove an average of 1.25 feet closer to bicyclists inside of painted bike lanes. This includes, by the way, just so you know, because I get this argument all the time. You know, I won't ride on the back roads because I just don't find it safe. It's not wide enough. And, you know, people don't have enough room to pass me and all this. And so where do you ride? Well, I ride on the big state road because it's got a 3-foot shoulder on it. It's not safer. The cars travel closer to you when you're in that 3-foot shoulder than they would if they were passing you on an unmarked road. There it is right there. Survey says. Drivers probably don't consciously drive closer to bikes when there are painted lines. They probably deliberately leave more space when they know that there is no dedicated bike lane. They have to go out of their way to make sure they leave enough space while passing. When dedicated bike lanes exist, they subconsciously trust those lanes are sufficient. The lanes do not offer any protection. It's a visual experience, and that's it. If the rider of the bicycle is weaving back and forth in that lane, the lane really isn't doing anything for either the car or the bicycle. So that whole visual bike lane thing, as much as I love seeing, you know, the lanes on the roads, because I see them out there now a lot, more and more towns are putting them in and all. But really what you need is, you know, I've seen this up in Boston on a number of streets, especially in Jamaica Plains, I noticed that they did this. There are sharrows in the roads, which is the other form of toilet paper for bicycles on the road. But there are sharrows on the road which show that bicycles are using the road as well as cars are using the road. But there's no lanes. It's just a big sharrow in the middle of the travel lane that both the car and the bicycle are using. So maybe that's safer. I'm going to go with yes. I'm going to go with definitely yes, that is safer. It's a problem if the bicyclists are distracted, inexperienced, or unfamiliar with local laws and regulations. That's why education is key here. We need to educate all those who use bicycles on the roads as to how they're supposed to use the bikes on the road. That's super, super important. So this, unfortunately, this article kind of points at the cyclists as the bad guys here. And studies show that cyclist behavior is a huge factor in collisions with nearby vehicles. And in order to fix this problem, two things need to happen. First, the cyclists need to put their phones down and concentrate on their surroundings. Franny, are you on the phone when you're riding your bike?
Absolutely not.
Absolutely not. Are you on the phone when you're driving your car?
Yes.
Are you connected to it, holding it up to your ear, or
no.
Are you hands-free?
Hands-free. I mean... Okay. That's right. What I'm saying. People in driving are much more likely to be on their phone than a cyclist.
So Franny and I are your righteous, your righteous too.
That
actually are trying to do things the right way. I'm generally not on the phone most of the time. I try not to be on the phone when I'm driving
my
car. I try not to be on the phone when I'm riding my bike. Although occasionally, if some sort of an emergency call comes through, I will pick up the phone when I'm riding my bike. But generally speaking, I do not. And one of the bonuses that I have as far as wanting to know whether or not it's a call I should pick up or not is it not only rings on my phone, which may be buried in my back pocket or in my seat bag, but it also shows up on my watch.
I don't have an Apple or an Android watch.
And also, a lot of the new computers, the Wahoos and the Garmins and others that are out there, also it will show up. You can program it so it will show up on your cycle computer. So you can see if it's if it's a call from mom and mom is 95 years old and maybe she fell down, you know, you might want to pick that up. You want to do that. But if it's a call from unknown number or spam, you're just going to let it ring. You're just going to keep riding your bike. Don't worry about it. But I do highly encourage you to bring your phone with you because I think it is truly the best weapon I've ever used on my bicycle when it comes to interacting with people who are unaware of the fact that they're risking your life. So anyway, so this says here, bicycles need to put phone. If they had been paying attention, they had been able, may have been able to avoid a collision. Let's ditto that with vehicles and motorized vehicles, people driving their cars. Put the darn phone down. Please, please put the phone down. Just don't think about it. If you're going down the road, you see a cyclist, a pedestrian, a runner up the road, and you're on your phone and you're doing whatever you're doing on your phone, put the phone over on the passenger seat and drive your car. Get around the situation. And then if you feel like you must, you can pick the phone back up. But what I would highly encourage if you're driving the vehicle, motorized vehicle, is just pull over. What's going to cost you? A minute, 2 minutes, 3 minutes out of your day? I think you can afford that. You know, think about all the days that you're out there doing things and the times that you've wasted 5 minutes. Just pull over. It's not that hard. So anyway, the real answer is cities need to design and install physical barriers between vehicle and bike lanes. Physical barrier forces cars and bikes apart, reducing the risk of collision and a bike accident. Gosh, I feel like I'm constantly beating this dead horse, but there we are. We're back. Sorry, horse fans. So what else do we have here? Not a lot of time left here, so I'm going to have to move on. Shimano says bike demand is above pre-pandemic levels. I may have mentioned that last week. I can't remember. Vittoria, the tire company, moves its North American headquarters to Bentonville, Arkansas.
Oh.
Yeah, what's with Bentonville? Yeah, good old Walmart. Walmart is creating a bicycle hub. And they're doing all sorts of very, very interesting things. Research this before you go to your local Walmart to ask them if they would help you with an access situation that you need for them to be able to have their store more bicycle friendly. Because guess what? The corporate office is real bicycle friendly. Remind them of what the corporate office will do. It'll make it a lot easier to ask the question from the big mega store. So anyway, and then the new office space is largely a six-story downtown building, specializes opening an experience center at the same building. So things are starting to happen in Bentonville. Kind of interesting. Remember, coming up real soon here, we have the bicycle game, and the opening reception is this week, November 17th at 6 p.m., and it is at the Hartford, where did I put this? The Hartford Public Library, the Hartford Museum, something here. Take place at 1 Elizabeth Street in Hartford, Connecticut. So you might want to check that out. It's kind of a cool thing. I am going, and I am planning on checking it all out, taking it all in. I think there's going to be some great stuff to see there. And it'll be a fun time. It's a little history lesson about what's happened in cycling and Hartford. And now that we have the National Cyclocross Championships returning back to Hartford, this is a great time to check it all out and see what you think. So, and this is at, oh, here it is. The Connecticut Historical Society is where this is, on 1 Elizabeth Street in Hartford, Connecticut. So remember also, in the midst of upcoming cyclocross races that you will find throughout New England as we gear up towards nationals, the 2022 USA National Cyclocross Championships are December 6th through the 11th. If you want to become a part of that, please check it out. You can go to my Facebook page and you can click on the link. You can sign up to volunteer. You get in for free all the days. You get a little wristband. They'll let you in for free for a number of days. It's a great deal, and you may have to put a little effort into it. You might be putting stakes in the ground. You might be doing some digging. You might be doing whatever. You're going to do some manual labor, but hey, it's a beautiful thing. Or if you don't want to do that, you can help them with registration. They're looking for help. They're looking for volunteers. Let's show USA Cycling what Connecticut Cyclocross is all about. Finishing points. When was the last time you signed up with your local town, your club, your nonprofit organization, your school, your advocacy group, and help out? Don't be that person who just ignores helping and uses others for your pleasure. So, sorry, I couldn't help it. Continued shout outs to Too Tall Billy and Laura, Laura Mullaly, your two tough characters. Heal up, both of you, get back on the bikes. I know Billy's been back on his bike, so that's a beautiful thing. Don't forget to sign up for the bicycle game at the Hartford Historical Society if you're going to the opening reception. I hope to see you there. It's coming up. So really, really cool. I'll say it again. It won't be my last time. Get loud. Get active. Our time has come. Stop complaining about traffic, dangerous roads, the price of gas, the lack of places to safely ride, and join the revolution of change. Remember, when presenting to your local governments, come with solutions, not complaints or problems. Positive beats negative every time. Respect one another. It's 2022. Initiate, participate, ride your bike, tell everyone you know. And finally, take the pedal and run challenge. If you have a motorized vehicle, park it. Use your bike just one day a week. You may surprise yourself. The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of the station. You've been listening to Bicycle Talk with my co-host, Fran Storch, a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you've been listening to this on Facebook Live right here, you can make a comment below, or you can send me an email at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. You can listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, or your favorite podcast outlet. If you'd like to contribute information to the show, drop me an email. This is Pedal and Ron. Remember, keep that rubber side down and the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. It really could save your life. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, and WHUS.org. Thanks so much for listening.